Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn what they do, how they got there, and advice for any other veterans seeking to do the same. Today's episode number 196 with Tim Kennedy.
I went in nearly naked with a mouthpiece and a pair of gloves and fought some of the best fighters on the planet. I don't know if there's a cleaner, raw, real form of measurement of one's toughness, of one's athleticism, of one's grit, of one's moxie. I don't even know what the right words are, but there has to be a way to test yourself.
Well, my guest today is a man who lights the candle at both ends, to say the least. He is a UFC middleweight contender. He has a new TV show on the Discovery Channel coming out tomorrow, if you're listening to this live, on Tuesday, July 31st, on the Discovery Channel at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Pacific Time. It is called Hard to Kill, and you can imagine he is definitely a person who is hard to kill. This is an incredible episode. I appreciate Steve Bain for making the introduction, making this happen. We talk about a lot in this interview. We talk about fear, about balance, about pushing yourself, about getting to be the best version of yourself. If you like this episode, definitely check out episode number 84 with Nate Boyer. I would say these are two of the more motivational interviews I've had. Tim, as you will hear, has every single minute of his life planned out. So the fact that he took the time to connect with us means a lot. He was just on Tim Ferriss's podcast. I'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. At beyondtheuniform.io, in the show notes, you'll find links to everything we discuss in case you want to dig deeper. So with that, let's dive into my conversation with Tim Kennedy. Well, joining me today in Manhattan, New York, and headed to Fort Bragg very soon is Tim Kennedy. Tim, thank you so much for joining us on Beyond the Uniform.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Quick background for listeners. Tim is a former UFC middleweight contender who competed in the Octagon while also serving in the U.S. Army as a Green Beret sniper. He started his military career in the Army in 2014 and has served tours in both Afghanistan and Iraq, earning a Bronze Star Medal with V-Device, which was awarded for valor under fire. He works with Ranger Up, a military-themed clothing line, and also leads Sheepdog Response, an organization that trains civilians in self-defense and counter-terrorism skills. He has been featured on television shows, including the Spike TV series Deadliest Warrior, Hunting Hitler on the History Channel, and the 2006 indie film Range 15. He is currently involved in an upcoming Discovery Channel show called Hard to Kill, which launches on Tuesday, July 31st at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Discovery Channel. And in April 2017, he re-enlisted and is currently a member of the Special Forces Wing of the Texas National Guard. He is a three-time winner of the Modern Army Combatives Tournament, a grueling three-day event that tests mixed martial arts skills, among other things. And so maybe, Tim, before we dive into the questions, anything to add or amend to that intro?
That was pretty long. When you just put it all together, we could just summarize and be like, he's stupid and he doesn't ever hold still.
I love it. Well, maybe, you know, let's start actually with the show. I know that the show Hard to Kill is starting on Tuesday, July 31st. Could you share a little bit more about the show and how you've been involved with it?
Yeah, I mean, I've been involved since conception. Since the very beginning, we were trying to figure out, I had worked with this group that was going to put this show together. And, you know, they'd seen me skydive, they'd seen me scuba dive, they'd seen me climb the side of mountain faces. And, you know, they realized that I'm a special kind of idiot. And so we were just like, well, what are we going to do? What can we do with this guy? And, you know, like, they asked me what I wanted to do. And I want to, of course, bring attention to this beautiful, amazing country of ours. And this was my way of doing it.
That's awesome. So I'm imagining it's going to be you in just different parts of the U.S. doing crazy things.
Yeah, it's not me doing. Yes, I do the jobs, and yeah, they are crazy jobs. But the the show is about the people that do these jobs every single day. You know, it's about the test pilots and the avalanche control experts and the EOD bomb techs and the bullfighters and race car drivers and oil tech, roughnecks and commercial fishermen, bush pilots. Like, the list goes on and on and on of these really extraordinary people that do these incredible jobs. And I just kind of come in and try, usually fail to do them.
What is that? You know, I'm imagining that some people listening to this who are on active duty that aspire to go into the entertainment industry or television specifically, could you kind of just paint the picture of what has it been like putting this show together? Or is this like 5 days a week that you're filming, or like what does your life look like as it relates to Hard to Kill?
It's like a deployment. When you go to film, you know, it's you are at the beck and call of need of what you're doing. You know, as a producer on the show, and obviously, you know, like the host for, it's not the right word though, because I don't know what the word is. I don't know. Because it's not contestant, because like it's so much more. I'm like a cracker, and there's a bunch of caviar. The caviar is the job of these people and this culture and the people that every single day do these extraordinary things, and then I'm just kind of there. You know, to paint the picture, it's hard work. You know, you get up early. You have to get a training session in. So, like, if my call time is sunrise and I finish about an hour after sunset, because you got to get the good light on both ends of the day, then I have to get – so sunrise, let's say 6 a.m., sunset 6 p.m. My day now is a 13-hour day, but I got to get a workout in. So I'm going to get up at 4:30, knock my workout out, go film – for 12 hours, you know, in between sets, try to run a handful of businesses, and then, you know, day wraps, start prepping for tomorrow, for the very next day, for the next day of shooting.
Man, has your life always been this full? Have you always just been burning it at both ends and just kind of cramming everything into the day, or is this more recent?
No, this is, I try to make use of every waking moment of my life. Double booking, you know, where I'm like, so right now I just walked away from an AOL live audience TV show to get in a car as I'm talking to you to drive to the airport to fly to California to do something else promotionally, and then hop on another plane to go back to grab all my guns and all of my kit and then fly to North Carolina. So, and in between every single one of those, every moment, an opportunity for me to be on a phone, to me to be on a laptop, for me to be on a plane, I'm using it.
I mean, this is, it's inspiring. And, I kind of want to jump down on the question list that I had, cause you know, you back in April, 2017, you re-enlisted, and I'm just looking in awe at everything you've accomplished so far, and you had all of this success in UFC, and you've got this TV show now and all these things. What led you to re-enlist? It's you know, you're describing this unreal schedule, and then on top of that you've got your commitment with the National Guard. And so what prompted that decision?
That's the right thing to do. I think we're in a time where everybody's looking for the easy out. You know, everybody's looking for the quick fix, the easy solution. They're looking for the pill that's going to burn the fat. They're going to look for the app that makes, you know, something a shortcut. And there's just some things in life that is not the case. And I believe that is not the case for success. You know, I have teenage daughters. I have a 3-year-old son. If I walked away from the military at this point, you know, coming up to, I'm 14 years right now, I'm getting ready to take an ODA as a team sergeant. I mean, that's the pinnacle of being in special forces. And if, you know, if I left early, they would know I'm quitting. They would know I don't need it. You know, I have the golden parachute of TV shows and massively successful businesses. I don't need to do anything, but I'm supposed to do it. You know, you look back to World War II and you see amazing examples of world champion heavyweight boxers being like, you know what? I'm going to enlist. That's what I'm going to do. you know, because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're at a time where when I reenlisted, we're losing Fallujah, we're losing Sadr City, like areas of the world that my friends fought and died in. And I'm not going to stand by idly and let that happen. I'm going to try and be an example of you can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's no, if I have every excuse in the world to get out. Everybody is going to have an excuse, but that doesn't mean you should. You know, the hard right is always the choice over the easy wrong.
That's inspirational. You know, the strange thing that comes up as you say that is, you know, this is the 197th interview that I've done, and one of the trends of a lot of the interviews that I've done is that a lot of veterans that I've interviewed, when they first transition to their civilian career, there is a concern about work-life balance. And I, you know, that's one of the things on my mind is just very hypersensitive to having some balance in their life. And then I'm hearing you talk, and I get this image of someone who is just, you know, carpe diem. You are just seizing the moment, and you are really making the most of every second, and you are still involved with the military. You're still doing all of these things. What would you say to someone who's on active duty, and as they're getting out, they are worried about, you know, having balance in their life or work-life balance? And, yeah, what advice would you have for them?
Worry's okay. You know, I worry all the time. I worry about my kids. I worry about the success of Ranger Up or Sheepdog Response or Will Be Shoes. You know, like I worry about the quality of a video that we're going to be releasing. You know, I worry about what Nick Palmisano is going to be saying next time he does a live stream. You know, this is that's not a bad thing, and neither is fear. It exists. You know, it's about what you're going to do with it. I recognize fear, and I think worry is just a form of fear, and, you know, punch that little bitch in the face.
Yeah.
And like every day I try and find the coward. Every single day I train, I try and find the quitter, you know? And when I find that quitter, I try to put it into the dirt. And the next time I train, I try and find the quitter again. And every single time, and sometimes I fail, and I know what I do, and so do my training partners, and they call me on it. The transition from active service, you know, from uniform into the civilian life is scary. Recognize it. Cool. Got it. Now move on and be successful. We know how to be successful. We're already better at everything. We just have to do it. We're more disciplined. We work harder. I believe that we're smarter. You know, I think it's 10 times harder to get into the military than it is to get into most universities, almost all universities. And like, take that and go and be successful.
I love it. I love that thought of find the quitter and put him in the ground each day. That's incredible. It made me think of you were on a show with Tim Ferriss. Tim was interviewing you for his, you know, probably the biggest podcast in the world, and you talked about this concept of hurry up and fail. Could you share more about that concept?
I mean, it's failure's not bad. While I hate failure and I loathe the occasions that I have it, if you look at my career, my fighting career, for example, you see in 17 years failure, you see losses, and then I come back and I win a bunch of fights, and I lose one, and I come back and I win a bunch of fights, and then I lose one, and then I come back and I win a bunch of fights. You know, leading up to fighting for titles and beating Michael Bisping and destroying Robbie Lawler. And, you know, it's, the way a muscle works is you have to make it fail and it comes back stronger, right? You tear the fibers inside of the muscle, and then it breaks down proteins into branched chain amino acids, and it takes carried by white blood cells to the muscle, and the muscle regrows to be able to take that same stress again and be successful. And then you tear it again, and it comes back faster, it comes back and stronger, and then you tear it again. Well, that's the way that life is okay to be. Like, you can fail, you know, and you just got to get, like a burpee, you just got to get back up and go and succeed. And that's what hurry up and fail is not rush to failure. That's not, when I fail in the gym, it has to be something pretty brutal that may, that might kill a lot of people. but it has to be at such a cost that I'm going to come back stronger.
I love that. What I really appreciate about that too, is I know that for myself, when I left the military, there was a lot of fear about the job that I would take and what that would do. And I know the listeners to the show that write in, there's a lot of fear about what they're going to do when they get out of the military or you know, succeed in that first job. And I love that thought of just hurrying up and failing, not worrying about it, like going in, giving it your all, learning, and knowing that you're going to adapt and overcome. I think that's really powerful. I'd love to learn about, you know, what led you to the UFC? What got you into mixed martial arts in the first place, and what set you down that path?
And like everything I'm doing and have ever done, it's trying to find the most extreme way to measure success. You know, both as an entrepreneur, you know, in philanthropic efforts, in fighting, athletics, and now in television. You know, it's every one. There's a lot of easier ways to see if you're a decent athlete. You know, you can go and play exercise at some exercise competition. I went in nearly naked with a mouthpiece and a pair of gloves and fought some of the best fighters on the planet. I don't know if there's a cleaner, raw, real form of measurement of one's toughness, of one's athleticism, of one's grit, of one's moxie. I don't even know what the right words are, but there has to be a way to test yourself. It's the same reason I compete in shooting. It's the same reason that, you know, you go as a sniper and go to sniper competitions. And it's the same reason that you want to see your business grow. And it's the same reason that, you know, like maybe I could go to Fox and host, you know, from a desk, but I'd rather jump out of an airplane with my visor frozen shut in a dead spin with my parachute strapped closed. That sounds better.
What was, you know, it's such an interesting question for you, but, you know, usually when I'm meeting with investment bankers and, you know, just more traditional careers, we talk about their day-to-day life. And I'm really fascinated to know, you know, in the UFC, like, what was your life like day-to-day? Could you just kind of walk us through a typical day of what your training looked like or what your job looked like while doing that?
In the UFC?
Yeah.
I'd wake up early. I would train, strength conditioning early. And then I'd come back and I'd hang out with my family. I'd have breakfast with them, take them to school, you know, whatever that activity was for that given time of year. You know, and they go off and start their lives, which might be, you know, going to soccer practice or going to school. And, you know, that gives me essentially 6-8 hours of more time to train. So then I would go and I would, you know, work on a very specific skill, or like I might try to get better at boxing, or I might try to get better at wrestling or judo or kickboxing. Then I would come hang out with my kids again after school. And then at night would usually be kind of the sparring time. And we'd go in with, whether it's live grappling or live wrestling or live MMA sparring. So I train 2 or 3 times a day, 6 days a week, eat about 6,000-7,000 calories a day, and you know, try to be the best version of myself as a fighter.
Were you doing this on your own? Did you have like coaches and trainers, or like what was your support structure like in this?
A lot of it was on my own. I would reach out. The UFC is not like the NFL where, you know, they have strength coaches and they have nutritionists and dietitians and they have physical therapists and they have concussion brain experts. You know, this is a pretty primal sport, and it was no different for me, where I had to find my own way. I had to find my own coaches. I had to find my own, you know, diet, and I had and I made a lot of mistakes, and you can see that in performances sometimes. But it's just the name of the game.
If someone listening to this, maybe they're on active duty, maybe they're deployed right now, but if they're listening and they aspire to go into the UFC specifically, or maybe just in general into professional sports, and what advice do you have for them about pursuing this type of career path?
Sign up for pain, man. Like, there's just not an easy way to go about it. You have to accept readily that there's never going to be a handout. It's a shark tank. You have to surround yourself with the best fighters in the world and the best coaches in the world if you're going to have a chance. You have to go to one of the major gyms, you know, whether it's America's Top Team or AKA, which in my opinion is kind of the premier fight gym. Jackson Winklejohn in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The guy trained out of there for a real long time. And, you know, I think they're still one of the best training locations in the world. It is not an easy life. You know, the fans are fickle. If you win, you're the best in the world. And if you lose, you're the worst fighter that has ever walked the face of the planet that should even have the opportunity to step into the cage. They'll love you for 1 minute and they'll hate you the next. And you have to have thick skin. You have to have a resilient perseverance that can't be dominated by anything but your own inner drive to succeed.
I mean, it's unreal the tenacity that must take. Is there any tactical ways you found to build that resilience, to build that tough skin, other than just kind of going through it and developing it as you go?
No, I mean, I think the only way to get things tough is through pain, is through suffering. You know, like, diamonds don't get made in really comfortable situations. They get made under thousands of tons of pressure over thousands of years, right? A sword isn't made by somebody combing its hair and talking sweetly to it. A sword is made when it's stuck in the goddamn fire and pounded with a hammer over and over and over and over again. And then stuck and then thrusted back into the fire. You know, like, that's how the impurities are slowly cleansed from the blade so that you have something of worth. People are no different, and neither is success. You have to do the work to find it.
I love that. I was just watching a video with my wife a couple nights ago. I forget the name of the lady, but she was talking about how, you know, pain is that the most essential teacher. And it's interesting to think of all the ways, you know, for myself, like, what are the ways that I try to get out of pain? Like, do I try to numb it with alcohol? Do you try to get away from it with, like, sugar and eating? Do you try to get away with it with sex? Like, what are the ways that we experience pain and we're trying to just distract ourselves? But it's like that scene in Fight Club. It's like letting yourself feel that pain. That's what leads to the growth. That's what leads to getting better. That's what leads to moving forward. I love that thought, or that image you had too, of just the impurities of the sword being beaten out of it. And I can't imagine that being easy, but I think that's a beautiful illustration for listeners of not running away from that fear, realizing that's part of the process.
If you look at I want to say the Army does many things right, but, you know, I was hazed brutally, fighting people toes online in basic training, you know, in SOPC, Special Operations Preparation Course, you know, guys just smashing us and pounding us and PTing 2-3 times a day, crawling through the gig pit. And it was, I don't know if I'm going to lose you. I'm going through a tunnel in New York.
Yeah.
It was an unforgiving world, an unforgiving process, and I would not want it any other way, right? The first time I don't want to feel pain, the first time I only hit in the face, the first time that I want to be starving isn't in combat, you know? And I said, we're in an era and a time where everybody wants this easy shortcut. It cannot be further from the truth.
Yeah.
That's not how we got to the moon. That's not how we built the Golden Gate Bridge. That's not how we built the Panama Canal. That's not how we fought fascism and won. That's not how we fought communism and won. We did it through hard work, blood, sweat, and tears. And success on the far side of service is the same way.
No, I think that's absolutely incredible. And one thing I was going to ask about too is, one of our listeners had written in this question, but it's, in what ways did your experience with the Rangers and Green Beret prepare you for the work you did in the Octagon? And you kind of touched on that just a second ago, but I would love to hear more about how that prepared you.
See, it just made me better at everything. Like I'm the first guy that shows up at the gym. I just got done in New York here, and yesterday we had to the minute every single moment of my day for 14 hours. 14 hours planned to the minute. Doing calls in between live interviews on the phone, in between training sessions. This morning, I did a couple of live interviews with Fox, and then in my 50-minute break, I go and I do a 3-mile run, planning for the amount of time it takes for my to stop sweating. I should have planned for about an extra 5 or 6 minutes, and I'm eating my 3 egg whites and 3 eggs with my avocado while I'm doing a phone call interview. After, it's like that's how we planned it. So, where did we learn that? We got good at that. We got the discipline part. We got the scheduling part. We got the planning logistics part. So why don't we just apply it? Maybe that there were some limitations because of the military, where I lacked the creativity, I think sometimes in fight camp and preparation because I was so regimented and I was so disciplined. Sometimes you just gotta let the arrow fly, and like the wind's gonna move it and you're gonna learn from it, and then you're gonna let another one fly and it's gonna be better the next one next time. But ultimately, I wouldn't change anything.
That's incredible. One other thing I wanted to ask about is I had read that you completed Ranger School, and I think something like 6 days passed, and then you were participating in the International Fight League. How did that come about? Like, what was that whole process like?
We circle back to how I'm stupid. I mean, some guys graduate Ranger School and they can't walk for a month. It takes them 2, 3 months for their bodies to rebound for how to metabolize food into their body. They're sick for 2 months. I finished Ranger School and 6 days later I was flying to Connecticut to fight at the Mohegan Sun in the first IFL fight against the Hendrick Gracie black belt, and knocking him out, pretty brutally. So again, it comes down to the force of will and a it seems like all the like expressions are cliche, they're corny, but like screw it, just go do it. I'd rather go into that octagon or into that ring and lose than not have tried.
What about what would you want listeners to know about Ranger Up? I think it's one of the impressive things is you've just got so many irons in the fire, and what would you want them to know about Ranger Up?
Ranger Up is the first military apparel line. It is the best. It's Nick Palmisano. He started this company like 2006, 2005, and it is the best about our community. It's our sense of humor, it's our style, it's our sometimes it's even our voice. It's the things that while we're in uniform we can't say, we try and say. The things that we think that we know we can't say, but Ranger Up can say it. It's a family that gives back to a community that has been so generous in supporting it. Like obviously I love Ranger Up. It's an amazing company and Nick has done a brilliant job of building it. And I think we're just going to get bigger and better at what we do.
Well, One of the last questions I wanted to ask is, I'm just curious if there's any resources that have helped you in your life. That could be a book, a podcast, a movie, a conference, anything that's helped you in your career. And I'm just thinking of the guys and gals that are maybe stationed overseas or maybe on a ship right now, trying to give them something tangible that they could go take a look at today to be bettering themselves and getting ready for their next career.
I mean, peers are huge. I have what I consider peer influencers. I have Jocko Willink, and I have Joe Rogan, and I have Tate Fletcher, and I have Aubrey Marcus, and I have my best friend Shane Steiner, and I have Nick Palmisano. So I have soundboards for ideas and concepts that, guys that are successful themselves and are entrepreneurs and are philanthropic in their own rights, and they are kind, generous, different. Like Aubrey, for example, is a very, very different human than me, but I respect his opinion in his mind and in what he how he views things. So I think that's really, really, really important. Like welfare is important. Let me explain this. When people are leaving the military, there seems to be this sense of entitlement. Like you should come to my plumbing company because we're a veteran-owned company. Or you should buy product X because it's a disabled veteran company. That's welfare to me. That's me asking for something for free, and that's a form of entitlement. Before you start looking for resources, you first got to get your mind right. You got to understand that you don't deserve anything. The only reason anyone is ever going to do business with you is because you do it better than everybody else, because you have a better product, because you have better customer service, because you're the first one to reply in an email, because you're the guy that's in the office first, because you're the last guy to leave, because you're the one that's always polite and courteous and disciplined in how he's going to use his time and respectful in what he says. Like these, you do not have an excuse to have vulgarity in the civilian world. I got it. You're in the military. That does not give you passage to be that anywhere else. Just because you have a tattoo and a bunch of beards doesn't mean you can walk around with a scowl on your face, intimidating your coworkers. Like you have, like that is another form of entitlement. Just work and work harder than everyone else.
I love it. I love it. Well, I know how busy you are, and it's such an honor to have you on the show. I always like to leave the last question open-ended, and that's just that you have answered my questions. You've given so much value to the Beyond the Uniform audience. I just wanted to open it up. Is there anything we haven't covered that you want to share with listeners before we wrap up?
We didn't talk about is giving. We have been so fortunate to have been given so much. The military gave us food, it gave us a place to sleep, it gave us skills, it gave us wisdom, it gave us discipline, it gave us a community, it gave us a brotherhood, it gave us family. And that giving needs to continue. You gotta what's pay it forward, you gotta pass it on, you gotta whatever you wanna call it. You gotta give back. You have to, whatever that form is, you have to be, there has to be some kind of selfless in there. And you gotta wanna see other people succeed. RangeRope has a ton of competitors. I want all of them to be successful. Every one of them. There's a lot of water in this ocean, and people taking cups full is not going to drain it. So I want I really truly believe that, and that extends to all every kind of avenue of the world. Like Sheepdog Response, I love that company, and I love what we're doing. I think we have the best product in the world. And there's guys like Johnny Primo from Course of Action, who teaches the exact same stuff, and he's just as good, and he's just as fast. He's even more charismatic. You can go and train with Mike Glover with Fieldcraft, and you can go train with Jeff Gonzalez. And they're all preaching the exact same thing that we are. And I want them to be as successful as us. I believe we're the premier defensive tactics training company in the world. I want them to succeed because, like, they're spreading the gospel just like we are. You know, so selfless, do it.
I love it. I love the abundance mindset on that. And yeah, this is incredible. So for listeners, Tim Kennedy is at Tim Kennedy MMA on Twitter. His show, Hard to Kill, is launching Tuesday, July 31st. That is 10 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific Time on the Discovery Channel. Tim, I know how incredibly busy you are. It means so much that you have shared your time with us today. Thank you.
My pleasure. You guys have an awesome day.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you agree with me that Tim is extremely motivational. I feel pumped up just having had that 30-minute conversation with him. I hope that you find this useful. Let me know what sort of questions you'd like to have answered in these interviews, what type of guests you'd like to have on the show. You can do that at beyondtheforum.io on the contact section or the ping section. You can find me on LinkedIn or email me at justin@beyondtheforum.io. Positive reviews on iTunes are greatly, greatly appreciated. And I will be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.